You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers. Joining me once again here on the pod, Eric Crocker. We're talking DBs. This is his specialty. And whenever I talk wide receivers or talk defensive backs, I'd love to have Eric Crocker join me on the show because he knows what he's talking about. He's coached the position. He played the position of cornerback at a very high level. And if you look at his track record, he's been doing a pretty good job of projecting players into the NFL and breaking down what he sees from players in the NFL and on the 49ers. So, Eric, always a pleasure. Thanks for jumping on and talking DBs with me today.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Let's we're trying to pretend like we didn't just talk about wide receivers. But, yeah, we recorded this podcast. If some big news happens with defensive backs and we're not talking about it, that's why, because we recorded this podcast probably a week before you're hearing it. I want to talk about the 49ers defensive backs and how they played this year. And I was pretty impressed. Obviously, you had to be pretty impressed by what the 49ers were able to get out of Jason Verrett off the scrap heap. I didn't even think he was going to be on the roster this year after how his season ended last year and what everything happened with his career and his injuries. It blew my mind. And now it's like, oh, crap, how much do they have to pay Jason Verrett to bring him back again now? Because he's almost indispensable, especially if Sherman's not going to be around. We'll talk more about Sherman, but let's start with Verrett. What did you see from Verrett in 2020?
Oh, man. I mean, he's back, right? I mean, that was as good of a season as you could hope for, you know, from him. I mean, even better, right? I mean, I obviously, like you, it was like, is he going to play? Is he not? I mean, they kind of brought him back probably just – we'll see, you know, probably paid him $1 million, which is like veteran minimum.
Yeah.
And damn, he was the 49ers best cornerback all year. And not just 49ers best corner. I think he would have been the best corner on a lot of teams around the league. So now it was really terrific. I mean, just to see somebody, I talk to my son all the time about battling through like adversity, right? When things aren't going your way, that's who you really find out who somebody is, what type of man this person is. And with Verrett dealing with the injuries he had, I want to say, you know, there was a stat before he even played with the 49ers, but over 3 years, he had played like 5 games. And then he played like a quarter, you know, with the 49ers. So, you know, you can extend that to over 4 years. He played, you know, played in six games. And then all of a sudden has like a young Pro Bowl Verrett type season where he played extremely well. 49ers went to playing a little bit more quarters than what they played, you know, previously. He did a tremendous job in that. If I'm not mistaken, probably led the 49ers in interceptions. So he made some plays there, made plays on the ball. I mean, he was challenging himself. I thought he did a really good job. And I was scared a little bit at the cornerback position after week one. DeAndre Hopkins, what do you have? 14 catches for like 150 yeah. yards. And then, you know, fast forward to towards the end of the year when you have Verrett, you know, out there and doing a lot of work on him. And I mean, it was like 8 catches, but everything was like under 10 yards and like under, like, you know, around the line of scrimmage, you know, some of them. And I mean, he was challenging them, had some pass breakups, had an interception. Even the last play that the Cardinals had, they had to throw it like out of bounds because they were trying to keep it away from Verrett being able to get to it. And I mean, it was just a tremendous season for him. And that was really, it was really cool to see. I'm happy for him. And I don't know him like that. I'm really cool with one of his cousins. I played ball with his cousin. We still keep in touch. We, you know, go to each other's kids' parties and stuff. But I'm happy for all of them, man. Everybody that's, you know, around him and, you know, his friends and family and everything. Like, I'm pretty sure that those are the people that kept, you know, his spirits up and everything throughout all those tough times dealing with those injuries. I mean, most people probably would have just retired or just dwindled away. And you would have been like, hey, man, what happened to that guy? Like, we were talking about, you know, Michael Crabtree. Like, man, what happened to Crabtree? Like, what happened to Jason Verrett? But instead, man, he might be up for a big payday, you know, and not like top of the league money. But, I mean, shoot, I can see him making $10 million next year. That's for sure.
Oh, man, if you were paying him just on what he did last year, he would be making mega dollars. But I think his injury history will suppress that dollar amount a little bit, which might make it possible for the 49ers to bring it back. And then you're just hoping that he doesn't get hurt again. But, man, it was like a professional wrestling comeback, like seeing him come back in the ring. It was like the Undertaker coming out of the grave. Right. And you're like, out of the casket. And it's like, this is Jason Verrett. When I started to see him close on the ball and making plays and started playing with confidence, and he plays so much bigger than his size, and I just had the trademark feet, and seeing him be able to diagnose something and trust it and close on the ball, I was like, oh my gosh, Jason Verrett. I can't believe he's back, because he was one of my favorite players in the draft that year when he was taken by the Chargers coming out of TCU. I was blown away by what I saw in Jason Verrett, and you have to hand it to him for his ability to come back from that mentally. And I think you said it well there, and it is a great teaching point. Like, show Jason Verrett to your children and be like, look, this is how you overcome stuff, because it's pretty amazing what he was able to do.
Yeah, really exciting. And I mean, I know we're going to talk about some other guys on here, but you know, a guy who I wasn't very impressed with. I wasn't impressed with Emmanuel Mosley this year.
I expected a little bit more from Mosley. And I think the coaching staff told us that maybe by not handing him a job to start the season. And then later on in the season, I thought, okay, well, he's going to be the number one slot guy, or he's going to be the guy who fills in here or there. And he kind of didn't. So maybe that was the coaching staff telling us.
No, not just kind of. They put Dante Johnson out there and played him. And put Witherspoon back on the outside and didn't even play Mosley. And I'm thinking, well, maybe he's hurt. No, there's him running down as a gunner on punt team. Like, I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? But he didn't play well this year. He didn't play well.
I wonder what that is, because I thought, oh man, this is the next guy. You let Kaywan Williams walk in free agency, and you have Emmanuel Mosley, who can play outside and he can play inside. He can play in the slot. And I liked what I saw from some physicality. He was good against the run last year, and it didn't really turn out that way with him. So that's a really, really curious case. And I wonder how much we should be counting on Emmanuel Mosley going forward and penciling him into really anything.
Well, I know he'll be back, right? I mean, he's going to be a restricted free agent. Those guys are easy to kind of pay and keep on the roster. But you would have liked to see them be able to kind of extend him further than just a year. So at least you have a young guy who you strongly believe in. But, you know, I've said it on Twitter, and I've kind of talked about things that the 49ers coaching staff and GM have said about Garoppolo. And it's, you know, don't pay attention to what they're saying. Pay attention to what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you pay attention to what they've done with Emmanuel Mosley, he resorted to a special teams player at the end of the year, when at a time where everybody was really down on Witherspoon, and Witherspoon was the one out there playing and playing well. So that was something that was, it was very interesting to see, for sure.
Well, let's talk about Witherspoon then. Is Witherspoon, do you think, someone who played his way back into the 49ers plans? Because it looked for a while like he was going to have an end that was similar to Dante Pettis's and maybe get traded away or even cut at some point. And the confidence seems to be an issue, and physicality at some point is an issue. And then you see him playing like his hair's on fire at the end of the year and making all kinds of plays. And it's like, man, that's the Witherspoon you want to see, because he's got great feet for how tall he is and length and speed. And he can be a really good player and a starting caliber player. And he played like it at points, but then other times he doesn't at all. So I don't know what to make of Witherspoon. You worry that maybe you pay him a little bit and then he reverts back to his old self, or you let him go and he proves to be a starter with the New York Jets or something.
Yeah, I think with Witherspoon, the biggest issue that he dealt with was never his ability or, you know, can he play the position? It was just always inconsistency. And, you know, we've seen very high level moments. Right. I mean, at the start of last year, he looked like, is he the best corner in the NFL? I don't know. Right. But he's playing with that type of confidence. You know, he tricked me. And then, you know, after he had the injury, you kind of see it kind of tail off a little bit. And we've seen that in the past where, you know, I want to say his second year in the league, he played very well first couple weeks. Then he had the injury against the Lions, and, you know, it was bad from there. And then he was kind of up and down. The next thing you know, he has a really good last six games. But it just, he plays very well in stretches. And then he has these moments that are just really low. And then he had a moment like, you know, in the playoffs where it's like, all right, we believe on you. We're giving you another shot. And then you have to bench him for Emmanuel Mosley. So I would say ideally you would like to, you know, bring him back on a one-year deal. Maybe something like they did with, you know, Jimmy Ward, where you kind of let him test the market, see, you know, where his value is. But if I had to put money on it, I'd say he ends up with the Jets. And you know, I mean, just, I think Robert Saleh liked him. From everything I'm hearing, and not saying I'm some kind of insider or anything like that, but you know, I just have some people that just, you know, they give me a little bit of information about what's going on. And I think he was in Kyle Shanahan's doghouse. And, you know, we've seen people get into that doghouse for various reasons. Well, not even various reasons. A lot of times it's if Shanahan feels like you're being soft or anything like that, you'll end up in his doghouse. We've seen it with a lot of players now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's might have what happened with Witherspoon, to the point where, remember, Brian, was it Brian? 48, right? Against the Dolphins. He just kept getting torched and torched and torched. And they had Witherspoon there. And then eventually Witherspoon came in. And I was thinking, well, if you had Witherspoon healthy enough to play this whole time, why the hell wasn't he in? But so something that I'm hearing is that was Shanahan's call to not have Witherspoon in there.
That was the worst call of the season right there. That was like, what are you guys doing? Like that still befuddles me. I can't believe they let that happen.
Yeah, so I don't know what Shanahan had. Again, maybe my, I don't want to say my sources, I don't want to sound like that guy, but maybe the people I've spoken to aren't telling, you know, the whole truth. But, you know, he sounds like he was in the doghouse, and, you know, but he came back at the end of the year, you know, played very well to close out the year. I thought he played with a lot of confidence. It didn't look like his confidence tailored off too much, had some big hits, had some nice stops. He was very competitive. It was really good to see him out there. But now it's like, damn, what do you do? What do you do with him? It looked like it was just going to be easy to let him walk out the door. Now, not so much, especially when you don't have, you know, a Sherman and, you know, Williams is going to be a free agent. Just all these guys are going to be free agents, even Verrett. What do you do with Witherspoon? If I had to guess, though, I'd say he follows Saleh to New York.
That's tough. They have to re-sign somebody. They have to have some bodies there, and we'll talk a little bit about the draft. More with Eric Crocker coming up, looking at 49ers safeties in 2020 and cornerback prospects in the 2021 draft. Richard Sherman, another big one. Who can the 49ers bring back at corner? All that next. Did you know chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers? Not rockauto.com. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are always reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than charging prices based on what the market will bear. Or you see that person behind the counter typing around on a little computer screen you can't see. RockAuto.com is not that. They are a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. It's a simple website, super easy to use. Find what you need exactly for your specific vehicle, no matter the make, model, or year. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. There are odds from Bet Online about where Deshaun Watson will land. More on those specifics later. You can bet on a number of things at Bet Online. Table games, poker, blackjack, if that's your thing. And of course, sports, NFL, Super Bowl, a million Super Bowl props, NBA, NHL. There is only one place that has you covered, and you can even get a little welcome bonus. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use promo code Locked On for your 50% welcome bonus. You can find Matthew Stafford odds. What team will he be going to? NFL draft futures. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code either, Locked On, to receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Croc mentioned Deshaun Watson there. This is going to be an insane offseason. Talking DBs here, though, and another big veteran corner, Richard Sherman. Like, do you bring Richard Sherman back, or is he as good as gone? And would you even want to bring him back just because of all the injuries he's had and now the calf, and he's about to turn 33 years old? I mean, I guess to me, you try to sign Verrett if you can, and you almost have to let Sherman walk. And if you sign Verrett and you sign someone like Trent Williams, maybe you have to let everybody walk.
Ooh. Richard Sherman, I would say bring him back, but it sounds like Richard Sherman is already gone.
Yeah, you know? Like, he's his own agent, so I guess you have to believe him when he says that.
Yeah, I've never seen that before, right? Like, there wasn't even like, hey, you know, we'll see if we can, you know, if we can make something work. Just kind of like Williams did, right? The tackle. Like, you know, he was like, you know, I want to be here. I would love to be here. You know, they get paid a lot of money to work those things out. Hopefully they work it out. And, you know, I want to be here, right? I want to be in service. Well, Sherman was like the opposite. It was just like, yeah, I'm out of here. So, you know, it was fun being here. Everybody just putting their like farewell tweets and everything. Like, I'm like, well, I guess he's out. There's no discussion. There's no negotiations. There's none of that. He's just gone. So, Sherman, I've kind of already just put him out of my mind moving forward.
Yeah, I kind of just penciled him in somewhere else. Like, he's going to be gone. And, you know, maybe that's New York Jets for him as well. And that would make a lot of sense there. By the way, Bryce Hall, I think a nice fit, right, with the New York Jets and what they got going on in that defense with Robert Saleh. I know Bryce Hall was one of the guys you liked quite a bit in the draft last year who fell. I mean, it's not a surprise he fell out of the second or third round, but he fell all the way to the fifth round, which was quite a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, if I'm the 49ers, I take a shot on them, right? I liked a lot of what I saw from his film, but you know, he had that ankle injury that was really bad, didn't get a chance to run. And there were some people from what I was hearing that were saying like that he's kind of viewed a little bit more like a safety. They had a tough go last year, especially with that defense, put a lot of pressure on the cornerbacks that they were playing. I'm interested to see him with Robert Saleh, you know, and then who Robert Saleh puts around him. I think they have a really good safety in Marcus May. They have some pieces there. There's McDougal, which did he play this year? Maybe he got hurt.
I don't remember seeing him in the game,
but I know I like him as a safety.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing him a lot in the field. But and Quinnen Williams, we get to see what that looked like. Some people wanted Quinnen Williams over Nick Bosa, so we get to see what Quinnen Williams looks like in Robert Saleh's defense now.
Yeah, well, Quinnen Williams had a really good year. So
he did. He kind of got kickstarted against the 49ers. That was the best game I've seen him in his career so far.
Yeah. So you have him. It is going to come together, but we'll see. There's going to be some 49ers over there. It's just a matter of who. And they have a lot of cap space to where, you know, they can do what we've seen other teams do with the whole transition thing, right? 49ers did it, signing Malcolm Smith, Pierre Garçon, some of these guys to higher contracts that you typically wouldn't do. But it's like, well, we have the cap space, so we can pay this guy, even though it's more than what he's worth.
Right.
But, you know, just to kind of help ease that type of transition. And even though it didn't always work with 49ers, biggest issue was 49ers didn't have the quarterback. Because people remember, they did win those last five games with Jimmy. Mm-hmm. They won six out of the last seven games. But they also, there was a stretch where they lost five straight games by three or less points. And so they were close with what they were trying to do, but they just didn't have the quarterback position kind of solidified. I could see the Jets kind of, you know, taking on a similar approach and bringing over some guys from the 49ers that can help the transition and help the learning curve of guys like Bryce Hall.
Yeah, and it was almost like when you look back, those signings look a lot better now that the context of, okay, well, they overpaid him, but they had roster space. They needed to sign players. Hard to sell guys. Free agents on coming to a place that's completely rebuilding and tore everything down. And they might have actually ended up helping build a culture and put together the schemes on both sides of the ball. So even if they didn't perform on the field and maybe they overpaid a little bit, it didn't end up hurting the 49ers. It might have actually still helped in the long run. So I feel a lot better about those early signings than I did when they were happening. I was like, what are you guys doing giving Malcolm Smith all this money?
Yeah, and everybody was like, Malcolm Smith, he's not that good. But, I try not to overreact to anything like that. It's just, it is what it is. You're going to overpay for guys to try to get them there, and there were guys that's been in the system, and they can just help the learning curve. I bet Malcolm Smith was probably good for guys like Reuben Foster. You know, I mean, he had other issues. But on the field, Malcolm Smith was probably good for him.
Yeah.
Malcolm Smith was probably good for, Fred Warner, and those guys. So, you kind of paid for just kind of maybe that veteran leadership to kind of show the way to some younger guys, at least on the field, it seems like it made an impact because both Foster and Warner hit the ground running and were really good, right away. I'd expect that Malcolm Smith had a little bit to do with that as well.
It's kind of like when you pay Chase Daniel $8 million to be your backup quarterback, even though you hope he never has to play.
You know, this dude's made $38 million.
It's crazy, man. Best career ever.
$38 million. And he's thrown for 1,600 yards in his entire career. 1,600 yards in his entire career, and he's made $38 million. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. Is my hero. One guy that could end up with the New York Jets, and actually, according to, I don't know if it was the player or the agent, Richard Sherman, that was speaking on Twitter when he mentioned that, and I didn't think about it, and it almost like sealed it for me that Kaywan Williams is going to be gone, and he's a New Jersey native. I mean, that's a natural fit to, as a free agent, to sign with the New York Jets, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I saw the tweet. I hope that's just him, just because somebody, I want to say Sherman was responding to a fan saying, the fan was saying they can have anybody, just not Kaywan Williams. And I think Sherman was just like, hold on, like this dude's from New Jersey, so it's not out the question that he would want to return back there. So hopefully he likes 49ers, you know, when they are able to play in Santa Clara. Hopefully he likes that type of weather more than that East Coast cold winter, and, you know, being out there in New Jersey. Shoes, the cost of living is more expensive there than it is in California.
Yeah, and so hopefully he doesn't want to tear up his legs on that turf either. That's another aspect of that. That Jets turf.
And he's somebody that has kind of dealt with, you know, being banged up a little bit, having some injuries, you know, here and there. But he's a terrific slot. Definitely the most, one of the more underrated defensive backs in the entire league. He does so many really good things. 49ers defense is definitely better when he's out there on the field. I think an underrated part of his game that I really noticed, especially this year, I've noticed in the past, but this year, he's so good blitzing off the edge. And Saleh sends him, you know, a lot. He forced a lot of fumbles the year before, 2019. I want to say forced like four fumbles or something like that. Had some hits on the quarterbacks. I mean, he does a lot of things very well, really good. I hope they keep him, because that nickel position is really tough. And you like somebody like him who just, you know, he just works and he just does his job and he does everything pretty well. I hope he's somebody that they can keep around. But you know, again, you got to pay Trent Williams, you know, okay, are they going to keep Verrett back, you know, bring Verrett back, you know, Kerry Hyder, is he somebody that you'll end up bringing back? Is he going to be a little too, did he do too good this year to where it's hard to get him back? You know, there's going to be some tough decisions that is going to directly impact that secondary.
Okay, more with Eric Crocker coming up. So many decisions to make in the defensive backfield, safety, and let's get into some of these cornerback prospects in the draft next. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Even better than before, with six new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple crisp, to go with their 12 original delicious flavors. 17 grams of protein, only 4 grams of sugar. And it's that protein, not only to give you energy, tides you over too. It's not that thing where you need to go running for a whole bunch more food later. You eat the snack and it tides you over. It does exactly what it should do. Oh, and it tastes amazing. It's covered in 100% actual, legit, real chocolate. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, even great for a keto diet. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. That is BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off your next box of Built Bars. You are unique, and so are your taxes. The tax code is one of the most convoluted things. It's hard to keep up with changes year to year. So being able to navigate your personal tax situation easily and quickly is paramount for a lot of people. And TurboTax Live has experienced tax experts who listen to you, learn about your unique tax situations, and answer your questions. And on top of that, they can do your taxes from start to finish. Maybe you started investing and want some reassurance from an expert that you're doing things right. Maybe you're now self-employed and need some expert advice on what qualifies as a home office deduction. No matter what your situation is, TurboTax Live's tax experts can answer specific questions, walk you through the process, review your return before you file, or even do it all for you. TurboTax Live gives you confidence that your uniquely you taxes are done correctly. Intuit TurboTax Live. File with the help of an expert, or let an expert file for you. One guy who I know for sure is going to be back, because he's never going to not be a 49er, is Dante Johnson. So he's definitely going to be back forever, I have a feeling.
You know what, though? I'll say this. Yeah, he got bombed on against the Eagles. But for the most part, he was not bad this year. I didn't think he was bad. And when I say bad, it, you know, I look at games like, is he the reason? Like, is this guy getting picked on? You know, and I didn't really think that was the case this year. You know, that Eagles getting bombed on, that was tough. It cost the 49ers that win, which ultimately, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, they weren't going to make the playoffs anyways. So it probably was better that he gave that, you know, 12th overall pick. We'll see. But, he wasn't bad. I think one thing that fans kind of – anything that happens to him, same thing with Witherspoon. Anything that happens to either of those guys is going to really jump out. But I'll say this. Neither one of those guys, Spoon or Dante Johnson, played as bad as Emmanuel Mosley. And I bet nobody will say that, you know. I bet nobody gave Mosley as hard of a time, but I didn't think he played very well this year. But they'll be quick to kind of put down Dante Johnson. I don't think he was the worst corner at all. But, you know, again, he was like your sixth corner going into the year, but had to play in like a CB2 spot. Like, mm-hmm. That's not ideal. And then play a slot Nickel. Position that he hasn't played in years.
I was surprised to see him out there because he just is shaped wrong. He didn't embarrass himself, that's for sure.
Right.
Let's talk safety. I want to get your opinion on some of the top guys in the draft, the 49ers, if they don't go quarterback. And I'm starting to think they probably won't. I don't know. We'll have a lot of conversations, I think, about that. But they might go corner at pick 12 in the draft. I want to talk about safeties first really quick. We finally got our wish. We got a chance to see a lot of Tarvarius Moore at free safety. What did you think there? Do you think they should just run it back and keep rolling with Tarvarius Moore at free safety and then Jimmy Ward at a sort of more of a hybrid position there and sort of interchange those guys? Or do you think they need to take a look at that and maybe make a change and mix in Marcel Harris more or draft somebody or sign somebody off the street?
You know, I think more than any other year, this might be the year where the 49ers can actually put some resources into that safety position, you know, with a draft pick. Everything that they're going to do, for the most part right now, because of their, you know, situation with the cap restrictions and everything, it's probably going to have to be more of a draft pick type, you know, scenario. So, you know, I talked about, you know, possibly or, you know, a receiver day two, right? Maybe third round. Well, second round might be a position where, you know, obviously we would like a corner in the first two rounds and whatnot, but that safety position might be something that they can address. Now, there's a kid out of, and I haven't watched his film, but I know he's a playmaker. I've watched a game, and he definitely had an interception in that game. Syracuse, number 7, safety. He was good. Like, he was good. And that might be a guy where 49ers start looking at, like, okay, how are we going to address this position? Because you have Jimmy Ward, you know what he's going to do. But between Moore and Harris, I think Harris is solid. You know, but I think he's a little bit better suited to be a reserve player, maybe starter, fringe starter. I think he does some things well. But Moore, I'm a little concerned. He was a little up and down. I just don't know if it's like, hey, we know we have one starter in Jimmy Ward. I'm not sure if we are 100% sold on a starter on the other side. Again, either one of those guys, they can start games. But are they a starter? And I think that's the question that the 49ers are going to have to figure out. They might give it time and say, all right, well, we're going to give these guys this year to figure that thing out. It, you know, it sucks. I was so certain, especially over the last 2 years, I was really high on Winfield. I thought Winfield was terrific. It would be really nice to have him in our secondary right now. Mm. I was really high the year before on Juan Thornhill. Really high. I loved Juan Thornhill.
I loved Juan Thornhill. I liked Nasir Adderley too, but Thornhill was like the guy that really stood out to me. Just because of that range he had.
Those were two guys where I was just, if I was in a, you know, draft room, the whole stand on the table or beat the table for this guy, I would do that for those two guys. Like, I thought they were two of the best safeties I'd seen coming out. And there were guys, you know, like you said, Adderley, that other people had, like, higher. But to me, Juan Thornhill in that 2019 draft and Winfield in 2020, I was all in on those two guys at safeties. And I just knew the 49ers weren't going to go that route. Hopefully, as I go through film and I start looking into some safeties, I see guys with those, you know, the versatility of those two guys. But we'll see. But, you know, it's going to be weird, right? Losing Tart. Tart's been a 49er for a lot of years now. He's made a solid career. He's going to play very well wherever he goes. He might be a guy who goes and plays alongside Marcus May out in New York. You know, mm-hmm. Who knows? But Tart's somebody who I'm going to miss Tart a little bit. I like him. I like him. I think he's a little sensitive on Twitter sometimes. He'll like, so, DMs me and stuff like, you're wrong about this. I'm like, dude, I'm not wrong. Look, I'm seeing it right here.
But, yeah, him and Jimmy Ward are grinders on Twitter too. There's a few players like that. It's tough, man. Yeah. It's got to be tough to be a player. You just almost can't have Twitter. You can't. People are gonna crush you for anything on Twitter.
I don't crush people. That's the thing. Is like, man, like I had AJ Brown. He tweeted me and then he deleted it. But it was like, people like this. What do you say? It was like, there's always gonna be people that try to set a ceiling. I'm like, dude, I say in the tweet that you just retweeted, like, I think he could be wide receiver one. Like, what are you talking about?
He sees a compliment and sees it as a backhanded thing. That's crazy, man. It's a wild world out there when it comes to being a pro athlete and Twitter. You know what's crazy though? Now that I think about it, and I'm looking at these players, so Verrett, Sherman, Jimmy Ward, and Tart, and Dante Johnson were all bulky picks. Verrett was drafted by somebody else. Richard Sherman was drafted by somebody else. Like, 49ers need to start putting some resources into their defensive backs, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's something that they really just haven't done, especially at the cornerback position. I mean, obviously they drafted, I know they drafted Ward to be like a nickel slash safety or whatever. And, you know, 2014. But outside of that, they haven't drafted like a true cornerback, you know, high since Ahmad Plummer or Mike Rumpf.
Yeah, you know, Plummer, like, and Rumpf and Jason Webster, that whole crew. Webster was a second rounder, I think, right? And Rumpf and Plummer were late first rounders.
Yeah, I mean, and then there was before that, like R.W. McCorders, and then I know a little bit after there was.
I mean, we're going to the 90s, right? McCorders was like 1999.
Yeah, probably like somewhere around there, but I know he was like a first round pick. Yeah. So, you know, it's been that long since the 49ers have poured some resources into the cornerback position. And obviously, looking at those names, Ahmad Plummer was solid, but Rumpf and R.W. McCorders were a little sketchy.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work out. But typically, you know, you're kind of betting on talent a little bit. And the more talented guys, the more physically opposing guys, they're typically going in the first round. And, you know, there are a few guys I know you were talking about before we started recording that. They kind of fit that mold and could possibly be there for the 49ers at pick 12.
Is there anybody that you're liking the most? I will have you on again and we'll get deeper into the corners and the wide receivers, but especially the top corners, because I think we can really nitpick those guys. If you're looking at drafting somebody at number 12 overall, potentially the big three names that pop up a lot are Caleb Farley, who sat out last year from Virginia, Patrick Surtain Jr., who we saw in the national championship game, played at a high level for Bama this year, and Joe Horn's son, JC Horn. Did you watch any of those guys in depth, and do you have any thoughts on the top guys or even some other names I didn't mention?
Yeah, so I've watched them, all right, and I have some notes on them. I've watched the most of Surtain, but I have watched the other two as well, and I have a thought in my head of what they are, all right, and they all kind of have the same kind of similar limitation. They are bigger corners. Surtain, I think he's the most technically sound corner I've seen in a while. It's almost like he has a dad that played multiple years in the NFL at a high level.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
And he just grew up playing corner and working his technique and stuff. That's what it looks like. But you're talking about 6'2 corner, 200 pounds, very good with his technique, very consistent with his technique. That's one thing that really jumped out to me. Watching him, it was almost like, man, I'm kind of bored watching him, but it's because he does everything so well. Now, the one thing I didn't really get to see in the film I watched was I want to see someone challenge his movement skills. He's a little bit bigger, so I want to see his hips. I want to see that change of direction. I want to see that click and close, right? Like how, you know, from off coverage, how good does he put his foot in the ground and run forward and, you know, maybe break up a pass. He primarily played press or he would bail. The one thing I kind of jumped out to me was I think he lacks a little bit of suddenness. Right. I think he lacks a little bit of that. If you know, you can kind of give him something and then it takes him a little while to kind of recover. I saw something similar to that with Caleb Farley, where Farley, I think he looks to be a more explosive athlete than Surtain. Like I would imagine his broad jump and his 40 be better. That's what it looks like. And now, again, you have to work on those things and there's a lot of technical stuff, so it could be slower. But I liked what I saw from that standpoint, but I thought his like turn and run, it took him a while to get up to top speed. So that was one thing that was really weird, like kind of watching his film, that gave me a little pause. And then when you look at J.C. Horn, who, you know, we've seen J.C. Horn have a terrific game against Seth Williams in the Auburn. I mean, just destroyed him. I think that was the one game that was like, oh, that's CB1, right? You saw the attitude. You saw the personality, everything, the dog, right? I'm the alpha male. But when I watched him against Alabama, I saw somebody that struggled a little bit, you know, trying to guard guys like Devontae Smith. And guys that are a little bit, you know, twitchier in that way, in that change of direction. So I think a little bit all of them kind of had their, you know, one limitation of just that quick twitch. A guy I really am excited to watch, and I haven't watched him just yet, Asante Samuel Jr., another guy who, you know, I don't know, his dad may or may not have played a bunch of years in the NFL. But I am looking forward to watching him to see if maybe he's the one guy that is a little bit, you know, quicker, twitchier. Maybe a little more, you know, quick-footed than some of the other guys who are a little bit bigger, a little bit heavy-handed, you know, play very well, challenge themselves well, but don't have that same type of change of direction movement skills that maybe Asante does. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And I've watched hardly any of those guys except for preseason. I watched Surtain and Farley because they were top prospects, and I hadn't watched Horn yet. I think I watched a little Asante Samuel. He's definitely not as big, and Asante Samuel Jr. might be one of the ones that's available in the second round just because he doesn't have the prototype size if the Niners do go a different direction in round one. But you know what's interesting, Kroc, and we got to go. We're out of time here. It's always so fun to talk to you, and thank you so much for the time. You, yourself, being a taller corner, you like smaller corners. Am I reading that wrong?
My body... I mean, so I use myself as a gauge, like as a starting point with all the guys I'm evaluating. So it's like, okay, Eric, 6'1" or whatever, 6'2", close to that, 200-pound corner. What were your limitations or what things were challenging to you? What things were easy to fix? What things were harder to fix? And sometimes one thing I noticed with me, and I see it in a lot of other corners, a lot of taller guys, we just don't have those same type of movement skills, you know, with our change of direction and stuff. And that's just pretty consistent among taller guys. You know, even if you look at a guy like Richard Sherman, you know, how long it takes him to kind of go one way and then go the other way. Now, when you see a guy who does it very well and has that size, that's special. All right. And I know that. But most guys like me don't have that. So some of these smaller guys, though, they do a lot of things where it's like, man, I wish I could do that. Or I wish I had feet like that. Or I wish I could change direction. Or I wish I could, you know, match a guy like Cole Beasley's size, you know, like that. You know, most bigger guys, you kind of just see them on the outside and they kind of stay there unless it's like a Jalen Ramsey. But again, he's a special guy. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I tend to lean a little bit more towards smaller guys. And when you say smaller, I'd say about 5'11", 192. That would be like my ideal corner. If I can get a 6'1 guy that moves like the 5'10 guy, then I'll be all over it.
But you just have to spend a top five pick on those guys. That's the problem.
Going pretty high.
Top 10. All right.
Top 10. CJ Henderson. CJ, he was one of them. Yeah. Moved extremely well. He moved like a smaller guy. Ran 4.3, but he was 6'1", 205. That was a guy that I was like, yeah. I didn't even know he was 6'1", 205 until the combine when I was watching him on film because he moved like a smaller guy. Mm-hmm. The whole time I was assuming he was like 5'10 and a half, 190 pounds.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I have Eric Crocker on the show, because Henderson was your cornerback one last year when everybody had Okudah higher. And it's not that you didn't like Okudah. You just saw that ability in CJ Henderson. And I think at least from their rookie seasons, you proved out to be right so far. So fantastic stuff. I love talking with Eric Crocker. We'll get deeper into some of the cornerback and wide receiver prospects later in the process before the draft and really lock in some big boards here on the program. Always fun talking to you, Eric. Thank you so much.
Yeah, anytime, man.
Such a great dude, such a smart dude, and always very generous with his time. Thanks again to Eric Crocker. Thanks to everybody for listening. Be back next week, breaking it all down. Everything going on with the 49ers, more position grades, more quarterback trade talk, more NFL draft talk, free agency coming up on Locked On 49ers.